Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and hello everybody to this third edition of our little podcast Beyond Business, right from ITB and the ITB Berlin Congress. So we're in the midst of the first day. It's very busy here around here, and I'm very pleased to have Mr. Camilo Navarro with me. Mr. Navarro, he's the founder of Wheel the World, a tour operator and a travel company and a platform for people with disabilities. Welcome and thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
First question, in these difficult days, do you have a safe journey coming to Berlin?
I did. Fortunately, without any travel disruption, I was able to get my schedule as planned. So no problem at all.
To give a little introduction for our audience, Camilo Navarro has studied in Chile, which is your home country.
Yes.
Where you completed your studies in business, economics, and project evaluations. Later on, you moved to San Francisco to study entrepreneurship and project management at the famous University of Berkeley. So you really got your academic background from this famous Californian culture.
So, yes.
I mean, Berkeley is a famous university. It has this liberal tradition, maybe a little leftist tradition.
Absolutely.
And then on the other hand, you have Stanford, which is also a very famous university.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems that the tough guys, they go to Stanford, like Peter Thiel and Richard Sunni, the hardcore guys.
Yeah.
The more philanthropic people, the more soft-spoken people, they go to Berkeley.
Yeah, more humble.
Is this still true?
I would say so. I mean, of course, those are still stereotypes, but generally speaking, I would argue that the people in Berkeley, they might be a little bit more like humble, and Stanford could be a little bit more. I don't want to speak bad about people at Stanford. I have friends from there, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
At a company like Wheel the World, you're not Palantir.
No.
So then I describe the difference between Stanford and Berkeley.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the social, component of Berkeley is still there. And actually, there's an interesting story about ADA movement, the American Disability Act, which essentially regulates the accessibility in the US. The movement started at Berkeley. So it is really an honor to be able to kind of keep pushing the limits when it comes to accessibility. And back to your point, I think that Berkeley definitely has in the center of their core beliefs is social impact. It's an important thing. Ultimately, companies should be addressing important problems of society and make people's life better. And we decided to pursue that path.
So you got all your academic background, or maybe the most important part of your academic ground, you get it from this Californian climate.
Yes.
And is it, I mean, California is so well known as an innovative hub for all kinds of IT innovation.
Yeah.
This whole startup culture. And is it really like that you could study in one of these universities for 2 years or so, and then you can build up a startup, successful startup anywhere, in any business, in any corner of the world?
Yeah.
Is it really much like that?
I would say so. I mean, I can talk on behalf of my own experience, which was incredible. I mean, I have nothing to complain about. So you're right. I mean, there is definitely an atmosphere of entrepreneurship. That's the reason why California, if you think somehow, is the largest, it's the fifth largest economy in the world. And it's not even a country, right? It's a state that is the fifth largest economy in the planet. And I think most of that is because of the largest companies that have been created over there. Like you have the Googles, the Metas, even the OpenAIs, now the NVIDIAs. And definitely is because there is a component of encouraging people to start companies. There's no fear of failing. Failure is part of, the journey. And that really sets up the ground for you to think about everyone is doing something. They're at least trying. The risk of trying and failing, it is smaller than not doing anything really, right? Or not even trying. So that spirit, I think, led me and my co-founder, who was also living there, to decide to start a company, you know, and definitely when you're around other entrepreneurs, around an ecosystem of like innovation and tech companies, it's like, I'm going to just give it a try. Right. And that's how we came with the idea of starting this company, Wheel the World.
So you would say in that sense, it is unique, no fear of failure.
It's absolutely unique. I think that sometimes people ask me, like, should I move to San Francisco, right? Or should I go to the Bay Area? This is not my, I'm going to steal, you know, one of the famous claims of people at Y Combinator, like the largest like startup acceleration incubation company, that says something around, when you're in the Bay Area, when you're in San Francisco, you are maximizing the opportunities of being lucky. You're exposed constantly to luck. I'm not trying to minimize the fact that hardworking is important, like to make things happen is important, but there's certain things that happens only there or mostly there that are just incredible. Like, for example, the fact that you can meet incredible, you know, angel investors. Like, our first investor was someone that wrote us a check with a PowerPoint. I had nothing else than a PowerPoint describing what was the problem. That guy decided to, you know, invest $50,000. And then you think about like people ask me, like, really? They, like, you didn't have any, even a company back then, right? And someone was willing to do that. You can become very lucky. And there's a lot of people there that are writing checks on those, you know, situation and conditions. So that's, I would say that that doesn't happen in many other places. However, I think that that's changing. I mean, I do think that people are valuing every time more, you know, startups and innovation and creation of companies. Because remember, ultimately, these startups and these companies are solving problems, right? That's the only reason why a startup become successful or grows is because it's solving a problem that someone is willing to pay for or someone is willing to use, right? So in that regard, I think that all over the world, I see every time more, you know, consciousness about, you know, we should promote more creation of companies, startups.
So studying at the Bay Area, that really takes your business idea away. So it's good to hear. So you can, it's strongly recommended.
Yes, I would highly recommend it. Yeah.
And then you started to with Wheel the World, which is in some ways you started at the midst of the COVID crisis.
Yes.
And then it's in some way it's a classic startup, but there's also a very personal story about it. Maybe you can give a little up.
Yeah.
A little insight on that.
Yeah. So
story of the founding of the company.
Yeah. I think I can tell you a little bit about how we got here in the first place, right? So my best friend and co-founder, Alvaro, I met him when we were 5 years old. We went to elementary all the way to high school together. And when he was 18 years old, he got involved in a car accident. And as a consequence, he became a wheelchair user. And since then, we realized that, you know, the world is not really designed for people with accessibility needs. And he, of course, it was harder for him than for me. But we both face the lack of accessibility in general, like, because if we were together and we wanted to go to a stadium or we want to go to a restaurant or a bar or we wanted to travel, the lack of accessibility also impacted me as well. Of course, more him than me, but still both of us. And a few years ago, we decided to challenge, you know, one of the most, you know, iconic places in Chile, which was Patagonia, Torres del Paine. And we started planning an expedition over there, a wheelchair user expedition. And we realized that there was no information whatsoever. Like, there was no information where we could stay at, how accessible was going to be the trail, that we needed a special trekking wheelchair that wasn't available for us. We didn't know if we would be able to fit in the hotel room. None of that was available for us. And we did a crowdfunding campaign to get some money to get like the special trekking wheelchair that it was created here in France, a one-wheel wheelchair called Joliette. And we acquired that wheelchair and we created like an online guide, you know, to provide all the information for future visitors to be able to repeat the trip that we were going to do there in Patagonia. Long story short, we did the trip. And we became the first expedition ever to conquer Patagonia. At that same time, we were planning our trip. Both of us, we went to study at Berkeley. So what happened was that our story went viral. And then hundreds of people with accessibility needs start reaching out, and hundreds of destinations start reaching out. Hey, why do you guys replicate that guide, but here in our destination? And we were both, you know, already students in the Bay Area. And while we were studying, we realized that the problem was just massive. Another point to say why I think going to study over there is just an amazing place, because not only you're studying different academic concept, but also you have a lot of space to, you know, explore the possibility to start a company. We had a lot of that. Every single like homework or any group work that we were doing in those classes were related to, you know, Wheel the World. And at that time didn't have any, like even the name, but we decided to, you know, explore, and we realized that there was a massive problem. You know, millions of people with accessibility needs are not traveling as they should. They're having terrible experiences, like because of information. So ultimately that led us to create Wheel the World, to make the world more accessible.
I mean, it sounds like a great idea, and it sounds like
undiscovered
niche market, or maybe it's much more than a niche market. And if I got the concept of your company right, you're working on two levels. You're working on a B2C level, like for people finding accessible places for people with disabilities.
Yes.
Like a platform, like a booking platform or a search platform. And on the other hand, you're also working B2B. You try to advise destinations or hotels to improve.
Yes.
To be more accessible for disabled people. And I would like to know more about this B2B thing. How do you, what do you do for these companies, or what is lacking the most
for people
not being the right places for people with disabilities?
Yeah, no, great question. And actually you pointed out in the perfect direction. Our company is ultimately a B2B2C company. So we help destinations to verify, market, and improve their accessibility information. So ultimately the B2C component is allowing, you know, travelers with accessibility needs and seniors to visit those destinations and those hotels, tourist activities, restaurants, museums, etc. So the thing that is lacking the most is information. This is an information problem. Let me try to explain what I'm trying to refer here. People with accessibility needs, they need very granular and specific information to understand whether or not they could visit those places in the first place. So, for example, a wheelchair user that doesn't know the altitude of the bed, you know, the height of the bed, might be a blocker for them to decide to go to that, you know, hotel or this other hotel, because they cannot transfer to that bed, right?
For obvious reasons, yeah.
Exactly. So they need that specific granular information. So I would say, and this is something that I see in many destinations, in many hotels, restaurants, and museums, that they think like, oh my God, I'm not going to be too accessible. And at the end, I always tell, like, the first thing that needs to happen is, like, let's show and display the information, because with that, we can, you know, improve the experience and also recommend whether or not that person should come to this place. So the thing that is missing the most is information. In other words, I would even argue that if the information were to be online and available, all of this information that I'm describing, probably our company wouldn't exist. The lack of that information, you know, and the fragmented information is led us to, like, to create this company.
If I would be a hotel owner somewhere and I'm asking myself, why should I invest in that kind of market? Because it's also investment, right? For hotel companies to become accessible, you have to invest in the beds or in the rooms or so. So it's also a money issue. Why should I do that? Because maybe, there has to be a rational argument to that.
Yes, of course. And there is. I mean, let me address first, like, the part of there is an investment. In some cases, yes. And in some others, it doesn't make. There's no incremental investment in terms of accessibility, especially if you are in the design stage. You know, ultimately, when you put a ramp instead of a stair, you know, that's going to cost about the same, right? Like, I mean, if you already have the stair and you need to get the ramp, right? Of course, there's going to be an incremental investment. But today, there's so many solutions out there. Like, there are, like, transportable ramps, or, like, I mean, you can address, you know, that stair with maybe, like, a metallic ramp. There's always solutions that ultimately will open the doors to one of the largest underserved communities in the world. Like, today, people with accessibility needs represent 15 to 20% of the population in every single country. And if you think somehow this is the largest community in the world that sooner or later, every one of us will be part of as a consequence of aging. So I have a bold prediction. The world will become 100% accessible. I don't have any doubt about that because fundamentally, seniors and people with accessibility needs will keep pushing for things to become more accessible. So you might see this as an extra investment, right? You're going to have to do it anyways at some point. I mean, even regulations are going to be improving over time. So at the end, you'll have no other option than becoming more accessible. And also, you know, you're going to open the doors to this new growing segment that is, by the way, spending billions of dollars in traveling. Like, for example, here, our estimations, according to some studies, like the Open Doors, for example, study, like there is probably 100 billion euros being spent by people with accessibility needs traveling, having bad experiences because of the lack of information, right? Like, so I could argue that if you were to improve the accessibility and display more accessible information, you could attract this audience, allow them to have better experiences, expand your market. I ask every single travel and hospitality businesses that are listening to us right now, like how many people with accessibility needs are you looking at your, you know, facility infrastructure like museum, restaurant, hotel? If the answer is less than, you know, 10% or 15%, you know, you're missing out. At the end, there's definitely an opportunity.
And apart from the hotel industry, I mean, you would say for destination managers, it's the same. If you look at the development of destinations, is it the same challenge, basically?
Yeah, it's the same challenge because ultimately the service that we are providing to those destinations is ultimately received by many of these hotels, museums, and attractions. So it has, let's say one of our clients is New York, you know, or Seattle or LA, you know, the fact that they raise more accessibility information, they're opening the doors for those local hotels, restaurants, and museums for people to go and visit them, right? Like, so it's a impact on the side of the destination, but also on the side of the hotels and restaurants and attractions.
It's a great idea from the Bay Area of California. We will hear more about it. And as you said in your presentation 1 hour ago, you said, we will all get old one day. Hopefully we will get old someday. Yeah. And then we will benefit from something like wheels and we will take advantage of that. And we might not be aware of it now, right now.
Yes, but we will.
It will come.
Yes.
So, Mr. Navarro, great having you here.
I think it's a
wonderful business idea. And I'm sure we will hear about it in the upcoming year.
Hopefully.
You're a new company and there's many things to do.
Yeah.
Great for having you here.
No, thanks for having me here as well. And congrats on this amazing podcast in this amazing place. I cannot believe where we are right now. Maybe you can share a little bit. I mean, probably everyone knows where we are right now, but I love it. Like, this is incredible.
We're sitting in a Volkswagen Bulli, which is a very old car from, I think it's 1967 or something like that. And it's a piece of art, actually.
Yeah, it is a piece of art. It's beautiful, well-maintained. I want to stay here, if you don't mind.
So, okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.